Podcast. Welcome to the Almost Perfect Podcast, a celebration of fuck-ups, failures, and falling flat on your face. This is a podcast that believes you can learn from experience, but that experience doesn't have to be your own. Ha, I'm but perfect and I'm a functional fuck-up. Let's learn from somebody else's mistakes. And today we are learning from Vincent Joseph. Now, Vincent is a comedian and a cinematographer. And he is someone who I've gotten to know quite well this year, as he is part of the Not Quite Right comedy team. And yeah, we obviously chat quite a bit about that. We learn about Vinny's start in comedy, which happened just before the pandemic and like just after I did the Heat City Comedy Festival, and like a weird lull period basically. And yeah, I learned a bit about how the scene was when I wasn't around, which was like during and just after COVID and stuff like that. You know, I was chilling. I was trying my best not to, you know, be a fucking plague bearer basically. So I missed out on quite a lot of shit, and I don't regret it because, you know, we're doing some dope shit now. But yeah, I learn a bit about that. We also find out about how Vinny got into cinematography, even though he studied IT. And we even learn why Vinny feels like he's never really had the opportunity to fuck up too badly. So that's all coming up in just a little bit. Of course, I need to let you know that this podcast is brought to you by you, which means you can support it by going to patreon.com/almostperfect. Or you can go to the website, almostperfect.co.za, where there's merch, and you can even just scan the little Zapper code there, and you can just coin me a few bucks. And yeah, it all goes towards helping bring this to you, mostly every week. Mostly. They mostly come at night. Mostly. But yeah, man, Vinny fucking killed it this week. Wednesday was a dope gig at Aces. Even though we got hits with surprise load shedding, like at 8 o'clock, Stage 6 got announced, and yeah, the fucking electricity went off, but we still managed to have a great show. The audience was fucking lovely, the comedians were mostly good, and Vinny did a great job. So I'm like, yeah, like I'm still feeling the high from that, man. The gigs have been good this whole month, like basically every week it's just been, you know, dope fucking crowds, comedians have been stepping up. So I'm still feeling really good about all of that. And hopefully we can see you in the holidays. Hopefully we can see you out at Ace's Pizza on a Wednesday night. Like, I've been doing different sets basically every single week. It's been like I've had to because there's been like so many regulars coming back. So that's been fun. It's been cool. It's like, you know, kept me on my toes. And I'm excited to see how it grows and how we keep growing with it. And yeah, man, this weekend was pretty dope. Told you last week I was going to Hilton to chill for the weekend, and that's very much what we did. Like, Jamie and I went and cruised through because her friends like literally have like a forest in their back garden, so went, chilled in the forest, and just like played with the dog and didn't do much else. Like, we just sat outside and chatted, and it was fucking lovely, man. So that was much needed. It's always good to get out into nature and amongst the trees. And what else has happened this week? Well, I guess we'll chat about it at the end of the podcast. But yeah, everyone DM'd me on Sunday morning, oh, CM Punk back in WWE. And some people were like, oh, aren't you stoked? And other people knew, yeah, maybe my opinion on that might be a little different. I even did a whole fucking episode called The Ballad of CM Punk, which you can go listen to. It was a couple months ago now. And I can't remember what I said there, but I know, like, I was just talking about, you know, the lessons you can learn from CM Punk. And maybe he's learned those lessons from himself now. And maybe his career will be bountiful and he can, you know, end it on a high. But I've got a feeling that as time goes by, that man will inevitably get in his own way. But we'll chat about that at the end of the podcast. And I guess the other thing I will chat to you a bit about at the end is it's the end of the year. It's the 1st of December, and what a year it has fucking been. I don't know how it's been for you, but it's been a fucking roller coaster for me. And I don't know, I'm just grateful to get to the end of it, and I'm grateful for so much of it. You know, like, I feel like I've grown a lot. I feel like I've learned a lot, and I've found a lot of new people who I've really been connecting with and who I've been growing with. And that's been very fucking rewarding, you know, because like a year ago when I don't think I was doing the podcast because of the whole, like, I got broken up with after a whole long-term relationship thing. And I really just like did not, I don't know, I didn't really know what the future held. And looking back now, I'm like, hey, the future had some good moments. And some of those good moments have been with one Vincent Joseph, who we are about to get to know a little bit better. Here it comes. It's the Almost Perfect Podcast with Vincent Joseph. So how are you living, Vinny?
First of all, I just want to give a big round of applause to everyone that's listening right now, because I know every time before you start your podcast, you go on like a 5-10 minute rant.
It's not usually a rant.
So kudos to you guys for waiting until Bob finally introduces me. Anyway, I'm good, Bob. I'm happy, dude. I'm just stoked to do this. Like, even when I was in the shower getting ready to come here,
we were listening to other episodes.
Actually, what happened this morning was like, okay, cool. So I'm doing this today. I was like, who do I want to make this a competition with? I'm like, okay, Tibbs and Liam, because those are like my only friends that have been on this podcast. So I'm like, okay, cool. Let me listen to these two assholes and see what they said and what they did so that I can just do better than them. It's all about competition. And I know they're listening right now.
Probably going to be listening to it together.
Ah, that's going to be an eyeball, dog. Like, I also don't, I don't know. I'm planning on listening to this thing again next year, like this time around, just to reflect to see if I have changed on everything that I'm going to talk about. Because, damn, I'm planning on talking about a lot today, bro. Like, I might cry.
Oh, wow. You want this to be a full Marc Maron episode, hey?
So to all the friends that are listening right now, and if you really want to know about me, stay tuned. She's going to be happening. Bob, take it away.
Well, I just wanted to talk a bit about, like, yeah, on the reflecting on, like, things. I haven't gone back and listened to old episodes for a while because, like, I know I've been, like, a little unhinged, you know? Like, especially earlier this year and stuff. And, like, yeah, and even just in the past, like, when I was doing some of the content for the, like, 200th episode or whatever. Not 200th episode. I can't remember. Just some like, retrospective thing that I was doing. And, like, I was just like, fuck, I hate this. Like, I'm so shit. Like, this the whole time.
I feel like the whole point is not to watch it back or, like, play it back. Because I do the same thing with all my stand-ups. Like, if I record my clips, I just feel like there's a level of uncomfortability that comes with it. Like, oh, man, is this me? Ah.
I hate watching old stuff, but, like, I've really been enjoying, like, we've been recording all our sets and stuff. And thank you for hooking that up. It's been very valuable to the Not Quite Right brand.
Come to the show. We need to buy a hard drive now.
Yeah, sheesh. And then more SD cards. Cause
Yeah.
Things are getting sketchy with one of them, as you were saying.
Yeah, dog. Like that thing right there, I'm just so happy that we started doing it. Especially like the filming part of all our shows and stuff. Because who knows how far we're going to get, bro. Yeah. Any of us, there's the possibility of it happening, quite high. I know it's comedy. But yeah, we have all our eggs in one basket. So I'm glad that we're doing it. And in some time, it's going to be worth more than a lot.
Yeah. And I think like, so with the whole, you know, it's comedy and whatever. It's like comedy is this usually quite an individualistic like sport, essentially. And everyone's against everyone. But you look at like throughout, you know, comedy history, especially with TV and film and whatever, collectives are what actually land up creating dope shit, you know? Like, you see so many times, like, I mean, I'm even just thinking, like, Odd Future, but, like,
yeah.
know? Like, the National Lampoon and stuff like that back in the day. You have the Lonely Island guys. You have, like, and even on YouTube, there's just, like, cool crews and stuff that put out
in
such
Living dope... Color was also a great example.
Oh, yeah, the Wayans.
The Wayans, yeah.
Yeah, they created their own thing because they couldn't get an SNL, basically. And, like, people weren't picking up their scripts and, like, yeah. So that's kind of, like, the ideology behind all of it was like, we can do a lot together. And especially True. If we all have ownership and we all have say and we all like, you know, like it's, there's no hierarchy. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, like I'll take the lead on some things just because I'm a bit more experienced. But there's also other things like with the film stuff where I'm just acting. Like that's it.
I feel like also that's like another great thing that you did with the Not Quite Right crew. Like you picked up a whole bunch of creatives that are in the same field, and like we all have almost the same vision, but we know what we're doing basically.
Yeah.
And we have like great potential to be great. I mean, we have scriptwriters, we have a cinematographer, we have
directors.
Oh, fucking, it's an amazing crew. And I feel like in time, if we keep on pushing at this right pace, we're going to do some crazy shit, man.
Yeah, because really also we've been reinvesting like a lot of the money into advertising.
And it's working. Everything. And it's working, bro. Like, yo, the sacrifices, Carmony, Liam, Tibbs, and Akil. That guy. If you guys are listening, it's going to pay off. I'm telling you right now for sure.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. But let's like with looking back, when did you start comedy? Because I wasn't around for it, I don't think.
Shit. So I started comedy on the 8th of August, 2019.
Okay.
That's
when
I started doing like stand-up comedy.
So that was
literally
like just after the Heat City Festival.
Exactly. So what happened is I had, my comedy story starts in 2017. I was in grade 10. That was in 2014, right? So like I've always been like into drama and improv and stuff and stuff like that. And then I was talking to one of my friends, like we were doing like a play and I was someone's understudy. Guy's name is Angelo, I think. Yeah, I think his name is Angelo. I was his understudy. I was his understudy. And then like I was talking to one of the main characters, like, yo, she was a good friend of mine, Vanessa. I was like, you know, I want to do stand-up comedy. She was like, oh yeah, go for it and shit. I'm like, all right, cool. So from that time, I've just started like creating bits in my mind, which I look back to right now. I'm like, oh shit, was I really going to say that? And then like fast forward to I think that same year, there was like a poetry club as well. I went there, it was like an open mic. I was like, yo guys, I want to do comedy. But then, you know, the fucked up thing that I did, I took basket mouth sit.
Oh, no.
And I did the whole thing. You know that said where it says there are two things involved?
I don't.
Oh shit. You need to check it out. It's okay. Basket mouth set. It's old set. It's called two things involved. So I did that whole set. Oh, everyone was laughing and shit. I'm like, all right, cool.
But did someone call you out or?
No. So a month later, another guy who was in the poetry club was also like my friend, was like a good friend of mine. Ulungelo, he came to me and was like, hey, my brother, that joke that you did the last week, I saw it. It was done by another guy. I'm like, yeah, basket mouth. Yeah, he's like one of the guys that look out. And then it went on like that. And then in fast forward, the second time that I did comedy in school as well was in the following year, actually. It was 2015. I was a prefect now. So this thing that they do, it's called Stay Awake, where like all the prefects, we go to school on a Friday and then we sleep over by the school. So it's almost like a slumber party. So we're playing games and doing stuff, but it's all supervised by teachers and stuff. And then like I told the guy, I was like, yo, I want to do comedy. But this time I wrote my own set. I had props and shit.
You see the carrot top?
Shit, I was ready. I'm like, okay, cool. I told all my friends, I'm like, okay, cool. When they call me to do comedy, you guys make sure you sit in the same place. All my best friends, like, sit in the same place so that you laugh and then the laugh spreads. I'm like, cool.
Hey,
I had planned because they knew I was funny and they've been like, oh, you must look into this stuff and stuff like that. I'm like, okay, cool. When the time came, these motherfuckers are spread out throughout the room, bro. One is in this corner and the other one's in that corner. The other one's in the corner. I'm looking at this shit. I'm like, oh, fuck, this is not going to work. This is not going to work. And I also asked the guy to introduce me as, you know, you must hype the people up. So the guy just came. He was a teacher. He was like, oh, yeah, guys. So as you know, it was Radwin, actually. He was like, as you guys know, it's like a night for talents and stuff. So we have some guy that are going to do comedy. Please welcome Vincent. Ah, was a dry, bro. And I walked in there, did my thing. I bombed for like 3 minutes, but it felt like 10 minutes.
Bro.
Just straight up bombing, bro.
Oh, bro, that actually reminds me of this one set at the Winston by this woman called Loopy, who had key cards and everything, and she was doing her set and like was dying midway through, and she was like, the best line ever, how long is 5 minutes? And I was just like, because every comedian has felt that, like, early on in the game, like, that those deaths are like the longest, like, it's literally like you've done it for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
It's not even that long. Like, it's not even that bad, but yeah, you feel like time has stopped and like, bro, it's never gonna start again.
Like, I don't know. It's just like, oh, it's a different feeling, bro. It's just a weird feeling. Anyway, dog, and keep in mind, this is high school. Once you get a bad rap in high school for
I know, trust me, I had the bad rap in high school. It wasn't a good time.
Dog, coming out of that room, I was just like, I am fucked for life. High school is never going to be the same ever again for me. It turns out the guys were actually pretty chilled. No one ever asked me about it because it was just like an experience that they never want to talk about. Right,
it was so bad they wouldn't even make fun of me for it,
dog. But then like I remember I spoke to one girl, her name is Chichi, and then she was like, no, you're actually good. I'm like, no, come on, be honest. Like, no, you got potential, you're gonna do okay, blah blah blah. I'm like, cool. And then I just given up on doing comedy. I was like, all right, fuck that shit, I don't think I want to do it again. And then the one time I was talking to a friend of mine who's also like a business partner of mine. You know those t-shirts that I always wear that says best so far, the best so far jersey and everything. So like, he's a music publisher, but he was a DJ back then. He was in Matric, I was in grade 11. And he was like, no, don't quit. Like, and then he gave me an example. He's like, do you know the first gig that we did as a DJ, we fucked up so much, but we didn't stop. And like, while he was in Matric, he was like he had residency, bro, at this one club in Florida Road. So he was like, yo, don't ever quit. Do this thing again. I'm like, all right, cool. Finished high school. Then I took a gap year in 2017. And then there was like a show that was going on at the school. It was like a fundraising. So they had comedians there. So I went there. It was Darryl Williams, Calvin Goldstone, Troy came out.
Troy Tesla.
Yeah, Troy Tesla. Yeah, Troy Tesla came after that.
He's been on the podcast.
Oh, he's been on this podcast?
Yeah.
Oh, sweet.
Okay, yeah, you're not the first one.
There we go. Bob, drop this E word.
I had to slide it in for a kill there.
Troy was there, and it was this other fat white guy. Like, his opening joke was he'd roll over on the ground, and he's like, see, I can do this.
Oh, Matt Armstrong.
Yeah, Matt Armstrong. Calvin was hosting. Cams was there as well.
That sounds like a interesting night, to say the least.
Yeah, it was. So they're doing comedy, bro. I'm laughing. So Calvin goes, I was sitting like at the back. So I kept on looking at Calvin. Because I'd seen like some of his DVDs before. Yeah. Like, I knew he was like a big comic and stuff. Kept on looking at him. So he also noticed that, oh, this guy keeps on looking at me. And then he just ended up, you know, like that whole thing of, yeah, I see you, boy. What's up? And then after that, I walked up to him and like, yo, I've always wanted to do comedy. Can you hook me up? How can I do comedy? And then he gave me Troy's number. I spoke to Troy. He was like, yeah, I'm going to hook you up and stuff like that. But then we never spoke again. I don't know what happened.
It happens.
But I still had his number. And then a year after that, I was doing like a gig because I used to work in catering. We catering for this corporate gig. And then Daryl was there, Cyril was there, and Troy was there. They were like doing comedy there. Then that's when I met Cyril. And then I kept Cyril's number for another year. Now it's fast forward, it's 2019. He sends me a message. It was like, yo, I remember I took your number in PMB. You said you wanted to do comedy. Pull up and do a 5. Keep in mind, I'd seen Cyril post about the Winston pub multiple times.
Yeah.
I'd seen him post about hair people multiple times. So I knew there was such a thing called the Winston, and I knew there was a hair people. So I think that the same week that I started, okay, now finally we had the story. When did I start? Yeah. So I started a week after the Winston pub closed.
Fuck.
Yeah. And like, people were just like, yo, you so lucky that you didn't come to the Winston because, boy, you were going to be humbled.
Yeah, but that's, yeah. Like, the thing is, I always weren't humbled enough, I think, like, to be honest. But, you know.
Why?
Like,
why do you think so?
Well, because people still have fucking egos and shit. Like, yeah, like Neil and I were chatting just the other day. Like, I was on the phone with him and that. So we're just talking about, like, yeah, some people just have a different mindset in the game. And, like, that was, yeah, my issues back then. But that's why, and still with some people to this day. But the cool thing is, like, what we, like, the Winston was also, was harsh in a lot of different ways, like, just because of the area and where it was and, like, the environments and stuff like that. And so, you know, a lot of, like, Aces is a lot more inviting.
Yeah, it is, it is quite decent. Besides the prostitutes.
I mean, it's the same, you know, like at the Winston. We had sex workers there as well.
Oh, shit.
So, I mean, yeah, Mbila, come now. Like, those are my people. That's where I grew up. Like, but, no, they add character to the show. And hey, if anyone, you know, after the show is looking to get laid, well, they don't need to harass women at the place. They can just pay someone outside.
Pay someone outside, yeah. Cool.
So I feel like we're just offering people an extra service, like extra value.
No. It was advertising to the right people. If we are really willing to go watch comedy at the Winston, there's something wrong with you as well.
Basically, but I don't know. I just feel like this year has felt very different to a lot of what was happening back then. And I know I've also, like, grown a lot and changed a lot. And, like, yeah, like, I've got, like, some people will disagree, but I've got a much better temperament now than I used to.
Oh, shit. So you actually calm, Bob, now.
I'm calm now, man, for the most part.
Yeah, I'm super proud of you for that, man. Shit.
But, yeah.
Because I don't think I would have loved that, Bob.
It's taken time.
Because, like, I've heard stories about you before I even met you, bro.
Yeah, but people also embellish.
Yeah, because, like, I was always told, like, oh, fucking Bob is a horrible comic. Bob dies like this. Someone was actually saying...
These are from guys who, like, I think are shit comedians, so it doesn't matter. Like,
so you couldn't give two fucks about them?
No, because it's like, I'd have people in Durban thinking, like, oh, I'm sucking because I'm not trying to kill at the Winston. I'm trying to figure, like, jokes out.
Uh-huh.
And then I go to fucking Joburg and I kill. And everyone's like, yeah, Bob's good. Uh-huh. And then I come back to Durban and the guys are like, oh, Bob sucks. And I'm just like, I don't know, like, maybe if you guys utilize the space, you know, to, like, actually improve your craft and actually be willing to die and actually be willing to suck, because that is a big part of it. And that's what open mic gigs are there for.
Uh-huh.
It's for you to experiment. It's for you to learn. It's for you to die on your fucking face. And, like, you also learn from that shit.
Yep, yep.
And then you take what you learn for when it fucking matters.
Uh-huh.
So you do the big gigs and you've got, like, you know, you've got your fucking chops.
Alright, cool. So yeah, I'm so glad now that the temperament is gone, because I don't think any of those people that spoke shit about you would have, you know, understood where you were coming from. Yeah, so kudos to the temperament.
Nah, and that's, I mean, it's also, it's fine. Like, I've learned, like, I also don't have to work with everyone.
Alright.
Like, I can just work with the people who I fuck with, and that's what we've been doing.
Not quite right, baby.
Exactly. But... yeah, how was your... And then COVID hit. So you started comedy and then COVID.
Oh, shit, bro. Like, I had literally just done comedy at one venue. I had literally just done comedy at one venue, which was the Happy Hippo, I think. I had only done the Happy Hippo. It was the only place I'd ever done, I think. Yeah, I think it was literally just the Happy Hippo that I knew about at that time. And, bro... shit starts happening, this COVID thing and stuff like that. And then, phew.
What did you do then? Like, obviously not comedy, or did you do any of the online gigs? Did you?
Yeah, I did actually one online gig. It was Masu's online gig. For some reason, I fucking killed that night. I don't know why. Because now looking back,
how do you know you killed?
Because I could, the people's mics were on.
Okay.
And I could hear them laugh. But then the timing, I just had to rush through my set. They will catch up with that joke. I'm already here because that delay, bro, was going to fucking fuck with me and shit like that. I finished that set and it was weird because I literally just set up a camera and a light behind it and I stood with a mic and I just did jokes. Flipping weird, bro. So I did that.
And what else did you do?
And then, like, slowly when they started opening up and stuff like that, that's when I started doing Altitude. Altitude was actually the first place that I did after COVID. And then we carried on going to Altitude, and then we started going to a whole lot of other bunch of gigs.
What were the Altitude gigs like? Because I missed that like era.
Oh, shit. Feeling. Some of them were good. Oh, shit. We've actually had like some of the great nights in Comedy Day, bro.
Really?
Like, I remember this one night, there was Baxter, Robbie Collins, Tabiso Mchongo.
Oh, snap. Okay.
Huh?
I'm saying, oh, snap. Okay, like that.
Oh, shit. And Paul Pops.
Oh shit, okay.
So I think it was that time when Robbie was getting ready to do that Netflix thing.
Oh snap. Okay, yeah, so yes, Robbie, that was just after the pandemic.
So like, most of those jokes that were in the Netflix special, I saw Robbie work them out, and like he was up and down jobbing. Yo, kudos to that man. Shit.
Yeah, he puts in the work.
Yeah, he puts in the work, bro. And then so he brought in Paul Pops as well, because Paul was also doing that thing. Dog, if I'm telling you that night that we had was, for me personally, was more fun than seeing the actual Netflix special. Because, fuck, that night was magical.
The Netflix recording, I don't know, like, wasn't the best or anything.
Yeah, because I remember that night, there was 4 standing ovations in one night. Flipping 4 standing ovations. Tabiso got one. Robbie got one. And fucking Paul Pops got one. In the middle of his set. In the middle of his fucking set. He got a standing ovation. Everybody just like, fuck, this guy is fucking doing the shit. And then at the end of his show, he got another standing ovation, bro. And then on the following night, because they did 2 nights. On the following night, there was 3 standing ovations again. It was a crazy 2 nights, bro. Flipping crazy.
You obviously must have learned a lot from those games.
Oh, dude. Oh, fuck, dude. I learned such a lot. I learned a lot. I'm not even gonna lie. So yeah, that was like one of the highlights for Altitude. I don't think I'll ever forget that night, bro.
Man, those gigs are also important, like, because also, like, you know, when you're a new comic or whatever and you're going to the open mics and that, it's death, you know, everyone sucks to like 5 people. And like, you know, you don't necessarily see, like, you see then what like Netflix is, you know? And like, you don't see how you get from these 5 people here to Netflix, you know? Yeah. And that is like those gigs, like essentially where it's like 100 people, 200 people, whatever, and you like watch these guys just absolutely like kill, like, you know, and you're like, fuck, this is what's possible like in 15 minutes and 20 minutes and like, yeah.
Right, it was, yo, that night was crazy. So after that, did we get another regular gig after that? So after that, we're just like everywhere, just hop skipping places and stuff like that. And then Altitude closed. It was dead for a while. And then we got, what's the one there across the street?
The chicken place.
Yeah, Wingers.
Wingers, yeah.
Yeah, so like it was a bit weird. Now that it's happening, that's why now, like fast forwarding to today, I'm actually more excited for comedy because I know like there's a guaranteed week of comedy for me, which is every Wednesday. And dog, I cannot tell you how much I look forward to Wednesday, bro.
Dude, same. Like,
bro. Wednesday nights are just, yo.
And bro, when I ran the Winston, Wednesday nights for me were just like, oh, fuck. Like, for real, dog. Like, that's why I had to take a break off.
Oh, shit, man. Yo, man, if you didn't kill yourself, you know what I'm, you know we're going to kill yourself ever again in your life.
Probably not. Like, I mean, until we don't know how bad things are going to get, you know? Like,
so, yeah, man. And, oh, shit, I'm also glad that, like, my comedy has, like, gotten, like, almost like a full circle. Because when I started doing comedy for the first time, the first person that gave me the mic, like literally handed me the mic to say, here's the mic, do comedy, was Tibbs.
Ah.
Yeah, my first night that I did comedy, Tibbs was hosting. Siddle put me on. But then Tibbs was like the first person that was like, yo, here's the mic. Ladies and gentlemen, this guy is, yo, actually, he actually introduced me quite well. And he wasn't doing bad that night too. He was actually funny. Tibbs has always been funny.
The way you said that, it's amazing.
No, but Tibbs has always been funny. Tibbs has always managed to stay afloat. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've had this discussion with him. Like, Tibbs has always kept afloat enough to also talk shit about who's shit. You know, like, you've never seen Tibbs die, or like you lose all respect for Tibbs. So like, you know, shit like that. Or maybe that's for me. I don't know how other people have seen Tibbs, but yeah. So he gave me the first mic to do comedy, and I did comedy. And after that, it was like, hey, he was actually quite good. I give him a round of applause. Because, you know, Tibbs had this thing where, like, if someone dies, you go back and then sit and be dramatic and be like, let's talk about this for 5 marks. So at least he didn't do that to me.
I mean, you do have to address the bomb. Like, that's the thing. Like, if someone dies, you gotta, like, say something, like, as a comedian, like, as a host, essentially. Like, just to, like, diffuse the situation, let everyone know, hey, we all know what happened. It's fine. But remember, there's other comedians, too. Like, that's fun. Like, that just happened. We all experienced that. It's okay. Yeah. But, you know, we can move on from these traumatic experiences. Unlike the comedian you just saw.
Yeah. Oh, shit. That's a total reset, bruh. You can't just walk back and be like, yeah, that was good.
That was good. Hey. Like, nah.
Everybody will be like, no, man. Stop selling us bullshit. So, yeah. I'm glad you say that. I feel like that's also something that's very important. We have to address the bomb. If something is obvious, yo.
And even if you're bombing, like, I know some people say don't. But, like, if you can make it funny, if you can just go there.
Talk. You know.
Like, I left my house for this. Like, I planned my outfit. Like, I got a babysitter. Like, dog, you got a babysitter. Like, can't we come together here?
You know, the most recent bomb that I saw recently, right? It was at Dropkicks. I don't know if you were there.
I don't think I was.
Oh, my God. I don't know if I should say the name.
No, don't say the name.
Bob, I want to say the name.
Don't say the name. We're not causing shit on this podcast. We're not... Like, I'm not doing that. Like, I'm done with, like, having to deal with fucking childish shit. So, like,
right, cool.
Leave
right,
names
cool.
out. All people right. people are too sensitive.
All right, cool. Yo. And then this person goes on stage. Yo, bro. Dies. Straight up. And then Robbie goes after that. My guy. He went in on them, bro. I was like, man,
that's like, so is this what you should be doing with your life kind of
bro.
Shit?
Bro. And you know how Robbie always talk about self-esteem? Whenever Robbie sees someone dying, and then I remember the last time we were in the warehouse, and someone also came and died. And then like, hey, you guys watched this man break his self-esteem for 10 minutes, and you didn't laugh. Bro. Yo, he just goes in hard.
But that's also a thing I've learned from Robbie is to also play with the crowd and also like tune them and be like, exactly, yeah, put it exactly. on them a little as well. Like,
exactly, exactly.
Like, yo, you couldn't cut this on a break. Like, told you it was his first time. Like, what did you expect? Eddie fucking Murphy? Like,
yo, oh, it's weird that we just like put ourselves in that situation. Like, just doing comedy, bro. It's like, you... sitting there thinking to yourself, I'm gonna write this shit and I think it's funny, or I don't know, whichever way you think, and I'm gonna tell it to maybe 20 or a random, okay, just more than 5 random strangers.
Hopefully.
I'm gonna tell them about this idea or the story that I have, and I hope they find it funny.
So what is that driving you?
I don't know. I haven't figured it out yet, bro.
Really?
But I just feel like there's something there. Like, I just look at it, I'm like, yeah, keep pushing, boy, keep pushing. I give myself a pat on the back all the time.
For me, it's just like, you know, a lifelong thing of saying fuck you to like everyone. And just being like, I will purse a fucking veer. You will see. You will fucking see. It might take some time. But we're going to fucking get there out of spite.
Man, yo, comedy, comedy will humble you, bro. It'll put you in situations where you're just like, yo, man, what are you doing yourself? But you're like, yeah, I'm going to keep on fucking doing this shit.
But yeah, it is the ebb and flow, though, with that. In that, like, yeah, sometimes it is like, fuck, what am I doing with my life? You know, when you do, like, gigs. And, like, we kind of... like, that's also what, like, I feel really grateful to you guys for was, you know, recently, even with the gig that we do, I don't know if you guys know about it. I don't know if we mentioned it at all in this podcast, not even once, you know.
Not everybody knows about it.
But yeah, we do the Aces gig every Wednesday. And, you know, even just like 2 months ago, We had like some pretty dead fucking shows.
Yeah, bro. Like I was watching footage, bro.
We had
like,
some fun times.
Yeah. We had some fun times, right? Because I was even like looking at the difference in the footage. For the nights that we actually never had fun, the videos just look so fucking dull, bro. But the nights that we're actually having fun, we brought that fucking key light, right? And it was just like bright and like... Yeah. It just, everything just changed. Like every video from the day that we put more lighting into our comedy, it just brought like fucking joy.
Oh yeah, shout outs to, I mean, you mentioned getting the lights and stuff, but also like shout outs to Yassine Barnes for like giving me advice on how to like run gigs like at last year's Point Waterfront Arts Festival, because a lot of what we're doing now like comes from that, you know, all the music stuff and like the lights and, you know, just making sure like there's someone introducing the host and like, yeah, if the seating's like, you know, like all the things we're doing, like essentially it's just like there's ways to like make stuff work and also like have a stage and like, you know, we've got like a dope vibe for an open mic gig. It looks fucking cool. So I do think there is a part of the appeal, like, and it has helped with, you know, posting stuff online. And it doesn't look fucking depressing.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
a lot of open mic gigs don't look like things you want to go to.
But we're creating a vibe. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. But like I was saying, like, you know, it was cool to have a crew to help get us through those like shitty gigs. And yeah, to learn and experiment and like, you know, say like, what about this? What about that? And like, yeah, coming together to like make it a better gig. And then, you know, bit by bit, by reinvesting in shit, like, we've been able to build like a decent crowd because people know about it because they're like, oh yeah, we found out about that on Facebook. And like my whole life of being like, oh, I don't want to give Facebook my money, but like it's bringing us money back in. So yeah, it's it's a good ROI, I think.
Yeah, true. The sacrifices were there. Also, big shout out to Robbie Collins, man. Fuck, yo, shit, that dude.
Yeah, he's been very helpful with all of this because he's been like, yeah, hosting and then also giving a lot of advice.
Exactly, yo, like a lot of advice. Like, I just feel like...
So what's some of the best advice Robbie's given you?
He always says, Vinny, clutch control. I'm like,
oh yeah, dude, you're like Speedy Gonzalez sometimes. Like even now, like, I'm busy captioning like one of your videos. And like it is just like... trying to, because you can adjust the speed of like the text and stuff. Just trying to get that right for you.
Oh,
it's just like,
shit.
And it's just like, fuck, it just disappears quick.
No, but I'm trying to slow it down now. Like, if you remember Stubnose was actually good. Like, I had fun. Like, I legit had fun. I was like relaxed and stuff like that. Like, but I had
obviously
fun.
That comes from having stage time now.
Yeah,
like,
true.
The more like stage time you get, the more relaxed you feel on stage. I'm even feeling it, man.
And also, it's that whole fuck it, I'm gonna persevere type of mentality, you know what I'm saying?
I know about that, I think.
Because the Stubnose gig was just after Joburg, and like, shit, you know, I ate ass in Joburg, bro.
Okay, yeah, talk about it.
Oh, like, fuck. I don't even know what happened. According to moments, maybe it was just like a deer caught in headlights, and then, yeah.
Do you think there was some pressure because you were in Joburg and you were competing and stuff that maybe got in your own head a little?
I don't know. Until now, I still haven't figured out what happened, bro.
I feel like you don't like analyze yourself too too closely sometimes.
I do. Yeah, actually, you're right. Like sometimes, just like, oh, that didn't work. Let's try 10%, which is bad. Like, I always feel like if I actually put in more work into my work, I would actually like do something good. Because like I remember, like, even when I was in high school, even like in college academically, bro, never attend lectures. Sometimes I would did pick
C plus.
Like... No, not even C plus, bro. I used to get Bob. You know, I graduated cum laude, right?
No, okay.
True story. In that, there was just like 70s and distinctions. So it was just basically distinctions.
What did you just study like when you needed to?
IT.
Okay, no, but I mean like what did you study? Like when did you study?
I was the type of person that would start studying a week before exams.
There you go, that's fine. Like imagine, how I've done things as well. Like,
so imagine if I actually put in work during the whole term.
Yeah, but some things you don't need to.
Exactly. I hated that. I hated that about myself. Even like, I feel like sometimes when I write a joke, like when I actually sit down and like type it out and rehearse it, it actually works out. I'm like, I need to start doing this more often. So I really started doing it lately.
Same. Like, yeah. I've been putting that like way more effort into it. I've been reading books on it. And like, you know, like it's... like, there's a lot of cliche stuff in there and that, but like, it's a reminder to like, just like, go back to the basics, essentially. Like, what is, like, you know, joke structure, like, and then just wordplay, all these different things. And then it opens up all the different avenues of how to write a joke about different things and that. And you can use all the tools, you know? And it's, yeah. So for me, I've also found, like, a lot of, like, the stuff I'm writing now I'm really enjoying, because it's, yeah, it's, like, kind of personal. Like, that's the thing. I'll think about a personal thing, mm-hmm. and then I'll try to think about, you know, different avenues, different wordplay, like, different kinds of, like, ideas to like utilize for that like idea and then take it forward. So yeah.
Oh, that's sweet, man. Like, I also feel like I can see where I want to be. Like, okay, this is where I want to be. This is how I need to figure out my thing, and I just need to put in the work.
Yeah.
Like, I'm at that point too. So like, hey dog, as time goes on, that's the one thing that I'm also glad about it. Like, we get to do comedy every week now.
And that's like, makes you want to write new jokes.
True. And we've been getting good crowds too. So you can't really try, you know, mess it up and stuff like that. So you actually have to bring your best when you.
Yeah. I mean, you're still in the middle, you know, you're chucking the new stuff and like, you know, like you start off with the banger. Mm-hmm. Like, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah. You always got to start with bangers.
And then you can, yeah, you can play around with mixing. For me, like, I'm mixing like a lot of the stuff that I've been doing this year mm-hmm. with, like, you know, stuff I'm writing. But also, the cool thing is, the more you tell jokes, the more jokes come to you. You know, the more, like, you're also like, oh, yeah, what if I try this? And you add on, and you add on, and you add on. Mm-hmm. So that's also, like, the fun thing is just trying an extra line or an extra tag or an extra thing mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. a joke that you've been doing. Like, mm-hmm. and that's how you build, like, a set. I mean, I wish we had more gigs, you know, and hopefully there will be some more soon mm-hmm. where, yeah, we can, like, do it multiple times in, like, a week. And you can watch just like the evolution will happen so much quicker. So,
So like during the past few 2 months, have you actually seen like a change in your like comedy and stuff?
Yeah, man. Like,
you're feeling it now.
Yeah, very much so. Like, especially with just being comfortable on stage and like mm-hmm, mm-hmm. figuring out the character and that, and also like host Bob versus. You know, like,
oh yeah, shit. Like, I should have brought my hard drive. Actually, I was supposed to give you all my what you call it, your footage from Stubnose.
Yeah, but yeah. I'm keen to check it out because, like, I don't know, everyone else seemed like I thought it went pretty well. Like, uh-huh, and like, uh-huh. you know, I was doing a good job, but like, the show was weird. You know, like people were paying attention and they were laughing at times, but not like at everything. So yeah, it was like true.
They were like a bit selective.
Yeah.
I don't know what's wrong with them. But it was a good crowd. I actually had fun. So, Bob, I was just thinking, you also like have done film and stuff.
A little bit.
Have you written scripts before that, like, you've been like out there?
Not stuff that's been made or like anything like that, but I've done various different things. Like, you know, they're on the hard drive. I want to get them made eventually. You know?
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, and then we did the 40-hour film festival. So like, I wrote the script for our film. So yeah, I came up with most of the story and everything. Like, I'm still annoyed that like, there's like Chekhov's hammer that was meant to happen that didn't. But like, it's fine. It kind of happened, but not in the, yeah, anyway.
So I'd written you in like as a character for one of the skits that I was putting, and I was just like, yo, I just want to kill Bob for no reason. Just kill off your character halfway into the story for no reason. You'd be like the Kenny of the skits.
I'm into it. I've died in things before, like other people's things. Like, it wouldn't be the first.
Well, I feel like you would have enjoyed the Roaring Twenties in America.
I mean, probably, like, depending on my social class, but yeah.
Actually, you put it quite right there. You put it quite right. Oh, shit. I didn't think about it that way.
Yeah.
But which like, social class would you think you would have, like, had a fucking bang of time?
I mean, obviously it was the wealthy and the, like, upper middle class who were like, you know, what the flappers and all of that shit is. As far as I know, I mean, I don't, like, you know, I haven't refreshed my 1920s history in a while.
Because I was just thinking to myself.
But it also seemed like for white people in general, like there was a bit of prosperity.
Yeah. That's why I asked you specifically. Yeah. I didn't say what about me, because I know my people were struggling that time.
Yeah,
but it's also like there were also like people, black people that were having a good time that time. That was also like the upper.
And to me, the era, like I would romanticize in my own head or whatever, like in America. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were gonna talk about Roman times.
Oh God, no. Like I know the meme. Like,
yeah. All right, let's
once
go.
Again they always would have just murdered me, dude. But like 50s America, like has a lot of like 50s, 60s, 70s, like has a lot of cultural influence just on like, I don't know, like guys like Lenny Bruce and shit like that, like really like his stuff that like I appreciate because of how, you know, they were really going against the grain a lot, you know, like, and genuinely when you actually got arrested for saying certain things, just for swearing and stuff and just for alluding to sex on stage. And like, you know, that's the kind of thing that like, I really like, I don't know, in my mind, I'm just like, yeah, I wish I could be like that, but I don't know if I ever could, you know, like, cause it's also like nowadays it's like, I don't even know if there are like that many boundaries. I mean, there obviously always are boundaries to push or whatever, but like a lot of them aren't, you know, they've been pushed already, and also just things I don't necessarily want to explore or whatever. So like, I don't know, you can also just use the art form to just discuss things.
And express things. Yeah, I get it. Like I feel like if you'd be like an up and coming comedian right now in some country, and your name is Bob Perfect, you're like, yo, why is a white straight man trying to call himself perfect? You might easily get canceled for that shit.
No, like
it's crazy. It might happen.
No, people would be on board with you for saying that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Like they'd be like, oh yeah, let's go. Like, why is a white straight man? It depends.
But those would be the type that say America. Those are the people there.
Okay, I get you. But yeah, like I'm so glad I don't have to deal with, like, you know, we don't have culture war shit really in South Africa. There's a few people, like it's conservative. Like that's the thing. Like it's definitely, like I know like stuff that I say is a bit risque sometimes and a bit like to most people's sensibilities, but I don't see that as like pushing boundaries or anything, you know. Like I just see that as me expressing myself and like trying to show people like, hey, this, it's also like, you know, by being taboo or whatever, and people don't expect it sometimes, and it adds to laughter and adds to the vibe, and like also makes people think sometimes. Like, you know, I've been doing those jokes about period sex, well, like, you know, the little like
and over the condoms.
yeah, and just like stuff like that, and yeah, like people get a little grossed out or whatever, but like at the end I'm just like, yeah, you know, you're missing out. You know,
there's
trust me, there's more to laugh. And like, so that's the fun thing, to be able to explore and stuff on stage, for me at least. Like, it's just, yeah, like Robbie even says it, like, you know, just say the thing that you think you shouldn't say, like to a degree.
Patrice O'Neill said that when you tell a joke to a room, 50% of that room must find it funny, and 50% must find it horrifying.
I mean, that's just him, though.
That's Patrice O'Neill is, yo. Whoever went to the school of thought of Patrice O'Neill, oh my God. That guy was, because like I only got like into Patrice, like I've seen like some clips of him, but then like I only started like heavily watching him like this year.
Yeah, no, he is a master, man. Like,
yeah, I mean, the guy was dope.
Like, he plays like with the crowd really, really well, and like, yeah, just leads like things certain ways, and like, yeah, like he says indefensible things and then defends him. It's like the book.
Yeah.
Like, but the way he does it. Like,
especially the sexual harassment joke. I'm like, yo, wow.
I don't know if I know it or if I can remember it right now.
Oh, you just have to go watch it. The sexual harassment joke, right? It's almost like that other Bill Burr thing of Bill Burr kind of successfully convinced us that it's okay to hit a woman.
Yeah, but this whole thing
he explained. I can't say like he convinced us, but he explained to us that for certain reasons you can hit a woman for this. And then that's also the same thing.
Which is also an obvious thing. Like, it's like obviously if someone's doing something violent and crazy, like yeah, you should subdue them, like if you can. But anyway, like it's, but that's the thing. It's like he takes the premise that's crazy and he just makes it like pretty normal. And like, yeah, there's obviously context. And that's the thing. That's the fun of comedy, is also taking a perceived notion, going into a thing, starting with this like thing of like, you know, I'm saying this outlandish thing. And then by the end, people see like, oh, it's, you know, ah, I see what you were doing there.
All right. I mean, it's dope. It's fucking dope.
But yeah, how do you come up with your jokes? Because like, I know like we're posting, like when, so by the time this comes out on the internet, people will see one of your bits about being, you know, living in an Indian area and stuff like that. So you, I guess you write jokes about what's around you.
Yeah, to some like extent, it's things that I just think of, because like I'm more of a, like, I imagine a things a lot. Like I'm just, my mind is just, it just spreads out there, right? Like that's also like the same thing with like my writing. Tibbs was saying that I write like a cinematographer. I don't write the script with like good dialogue.
Yeah,
I can,
yeah,
write like, I can paint for you like a good cinematographer.
Yeah, you see, I'm the exact opposite. Like I'm sure you might maybe saw that one script had like a sent. Yeah, yeah. And like it's all dialogue and there's like a little bit of direction in between. But like it's like, yeah, I don't like, I'm like, that's up to you to figure out. But I'm like,
all right, this is how you want it. Okay, cool. So like my jokes mostly just like shit that I just imagine, or like some thing just happened, like that whole neighbor thing. It's like actual true story. Like, yeah, one of my neighbors, yeah, was screaming at their neighbor, like, "Yo, your dog is acting like a black guy."
It's not the exact language used, but yeah,
yeah, not the exact language that he used. So yeah, shit like just happened, and on any other day, I don't think anyone else would find it funny. But I was just like, "Oh shit, that's actually funny." If I put it in this way, if I build a story around it like this to make the people show that what happened before that, I can tell a joke about it. So that's how I came up with it.
And the thing is, it's like a relatable joke for people in your situation. And like, yeah, and it's also, it does delve into, you know, politics of race and all these things in like a subtle way.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, true.
That's
true.
What's, yeah, that's what's cool about that. But I think for me at least, I'm just like, yeah, there's layers here.
There's something in there.
It's like a little lasagna.
So yeah, it's mostly stuff like that. And
then just imagining, like, because you also, yeah, you also do like a bit more storytelling kind of stuff than like,
yeah, 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 yeah. You see like that other short film, that was a good cinematography or whatever. It was good. But then like if I had to put dialogue in there, I would just fuck up that whole story.
Oh yeah, that one with the three.
Yeah. I shot that with my good friend Celine.
Cool. Let's actually talk a bit about cinematography. Like, because you studied IT, but you don't do IT no more. Like,
yo, doc. Yo. Because, you know, growing up, I always used to shout on people that were like, oh, I left my engineering job to do this because I love this. I was like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And then I graduated with IT and I was just like, ah. It's time, I guess. Ugh. And I was just like, nah, I'm not going to do it. I hated it about myself. But then also there was like stuff that was just way out of my control for me to do what was, you know, expecting me to do. So I was just like, hey, let me just take the easy way out.
Okay.
Yeah. It's almost like the last time I cried.
Last.
I had options to hang myself or cry. So I chose to be a little bitch. So yeah, it's stuff like that right there. So,
what do you mean stuff like that right there? Like, what you would, like, what do you mean? Like, so you just couldn't do the job? Like, what do you mean? Like,
yeah, I mean it was obviously like also me, like me being from Zim and stuff like that.
Oh, okay, there was legal
stuff. Like, it was just like going to be like a lot of money. I was like,
oh, to get the permits and stuff like that.
Yeah, because now sure, it was a lot, and like that. Time I just didn't have money. I was like, cool, I'm sure I can make money for this photography and cinematography thing. And yeah, it's been okay. It's been okay. It's promising.
But how did you get into it? Like how did you start?
Like I told you, bro,
you were doing stuff from high school or
like with comedy and stuff?
No, with the cinematography.
No, actually no,
because you said like you were doing like plays and stuff then. But then yeah, when did you start filming things?
In hindsight, like, there was also, like, a part of me that also wanted, like, to film I wanted to do both, actually. Like, yeah, I also wanted to film and think, but I didn't have access to cameras and stuff like that. So I managed to find this production that goes in my school. It's called Aero SA, and they had a camera, but they didn't know how to use it. So one of the guys that's in charge of the school, they were just like, yo, can you just come and help us shoot this stuff? Because we know you like doing shooting and stuff. And that's how I started filming and editing. But prior to that, I'd done small, tiny videos on the phone and stuff like that. But
wow, nothing so that you big. Just learned by doing?
Yep. I just love doing it.
I assume lots of hours on YouTube.
Actually, I wasn't introduced to that YouTube life.
Really? So what, you were just experimenting? You were just chopping things up and just seeing what happens when you do... I mean, that reminds me of my early, when I was a teenager and stuff, when I first had a computer, my first computer,
mm-hmm.
and it had Windows Movie Maker, and I would just because people used to make those DBZ edits,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and I would try my hand at that sort of shit, you know?
I would like to see some of that footage.
Well, that does not exist anymore.
I will pay.
Yeah.
So it's always been like that. So yeah. And then I finally got my own cameras and stuff. Well, a camera. And I just started filming. But I don't think I'm doing as much as I should be filming, though. I should be filming more.
I mean, it feels like you feel like that way about everything.
Yeah, I'm lazy. So yeah, that's the whole part of filming and stuff.
But how did you, I assume you had a lifelong love of film, or?
You know, when you just do something and you just feel happy.
Is that it? Is it actually just the editor? What about, because that's what I'm saying. I would imagine you grew up and you watch stuff, but instead it's actually just the making it that you're really into.
I also feel like it's sometimes when I'm listening to a song. Let me take you on a side road. Sometimes when I listen to a song, I just imagine how I would shoot that music video.
That's been me since I was a kid, dude. I used to walk around
uh-huh.
with headphones in and just imagine the music video.
So you get what I'm saying. So I just used to have that. And then when I could finally do it, which I did with one of the music video that I made for my best friend, Mesmerized. He sent it to me. I just put it on my headsets and I just imagined the whole thing, and it came out the same way I envisioned it. I mean, I had more ideas and stuff that we couldn't do because of budget stuff. We literally shot that whole music video under 600 rand.
And that was what, all on food?
No, not even on food. We paid for a venue for I paid for it. That fucker Wandile didn't pay for it. I was paying for the video. So I paid for the venue and I paid for props and stuff like that, because I had to give him shades. I had to give that other lovely lady Monique a hair, a sun hair type thing. So yeah, that's how much we literally spent on that video. It's crazy.
But then I assume it's a good advert for more work.
Yeah. It's been good. It's one of my favorites, actually. Mm-hmm. Not the favorite, one of my favorites. I'm just going to be specific there.
But with all of that, I assume you're also quite used to low budgets now.
Bro, that has been my struggle. Yo, it's hard being a freelancer, dog. Shit. But it all pays off at the end.
We hope.
And also, once in a while, you get that gig that just pays you enough to push you for the next 3 months. So, you survive from that.
That's a story of my life, man. It's just the one big score, every year. And then everything else is just, puttering along.
Shit. You're just trying to keep afloat.
Yeah. And, it all works out in the end, like you say. Because, I mean, for me, it's also like with you, you're doing the thing that you enjoy, and and it's also I don't want kids. I don't have kids. I'm not planning that life. I do have goals that require money, but also we're working towards that all together in terms of the comedy side of things and the film side of things and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, what do I have to complain about? I've managed to make shit work for this long.
I'm just thinking about it. This whole podcast, I don't think we've given people anything informative. I feel it's just been you and me just talking about our perspective on things.
That's what this podcast is. Like,
yeah, thank you. Thank you for saying that. If you've listened until now,
people have learned a lot about you.
You're like an OG. For real. I don't think I've given much about myself. So.
Yeah, you've spoken about, you know, the school and stuff. And like,
oh, yeah, shit. Yeah, I'm a quality shit. Yeah.
Yeah, you've spoken about your whole comedy career.
Yeah, but you see, that's just my self-esteem thinking, who is worried about you, bro? Fuck off.
Oh, fuck, dude. Like, you learn to get rid of that voice sometimes, I guess. I've also got, like, imposter syndrome.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Fuck, I've been doing it all this time.
Yeah, that's what imposter syndrome is. It's that voice in the back of your head of like, no one cares about this, bro. Why are you doing this? Oh, you're not good enough. Like, this is stupid. Like, that's, you know.
So all of my friends have just been risking it being best friends with someone that has imposter syndrome.
Here's the thing, though. Everyone has it.
Oh, for real?
Almost, except for like psychopaths and sociopaths, I guess.
Wait. How's it? With the psychopaths and sociopaths, because I'm sure their voices are like fucking.
Yeah, it's not telling them they suck.
Oh shit! Okay, cool.
I could be completely wrong. I mean,
but
from my understanding of these things through pop culture and brief readings of psychology books, that's my understanding.
I learned something today. Fuck. Because I was thinking about it the other day. Like, we all just risking it. Because, like, sometimes I would drive. Like, obviously, because I don't drive. Because maybe I'm driving with a friend of mine or something. And, like, I just see people driving at the same speed.
Bro, this is a thing that fucking, like, makes me so, like, yeah, like, fucking anxious.
Okay, cool. Let me get your anxiety higher, right? So, we just...
Trusting.
I'm just trusting that the guy there in front of me has got all his shit in order. Like, he's not just gonna randomly say, hey man, fuck this.
And the guy behind you, and the guy next to you, and the next guys, and this continual the whole
everyone. Time. Bro, especially truck drivers.
Yep.
Oh, fuck.
No, dude, like, my whole thing is that driving should be a job. Like, no one should just be able to get their license. Like, public transport should be way better than it is. Unfortunately, it isn't. And, like, driving should be a thing people have to go, like, every year. And, like, so it's super safe. And, like, you have the safest possible. But that'll never happen. So.
Bro, and, like, within that trust, that I just trust the Hyundai i10 right there. The driver got his shit in order, right? And you have other people that have the nerve to cut you in traffic, to a point you're just like, hey, fuck you. And then there's road rage. I'm like, what if one of... Because, I mean, there's been scenarios like that,
yeah.
I'm sure.
No, like lots, yeah.
Like during a road rage, just everyone just like, you know what, fuck this. I'm fucking you up and everyone else on the road.
Shoot each other. Like, no, dude, things... Yeah, like I get stressed out on the road sometimes.
Even psychology is fucked up, bro. Like, no ways.
Yeah, so no, I fucking feel you there, dude. Like, we relate on that.
I've been cooking this whole week. I'm like, okay. Because, like, when I had to fly to Joburg and stuff, I'm like, okay, cool. The pilot got his shit in order, bro.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, flying is just, like, statistically insanely safer. Because, like, there's just... Because, like, you have to have your pilot's license and you have to, like, constantly be training and constantly be, like, retesting and stuff. And you also have to, like... The planes have to be inspected constantly in that.
No. I don't give a fuck about the plane and stuff. I'm worried more about the guy who's controlling. Yo, Bob, would you? Right, cool. You bought a plane, right?
No, they do psych evaluations.
No. Wait. You bought an airplane, right? And you're in the toilet, and then you hear your pilot arguing with his wife. Oh, okay. I'm not going to say why. Oh, with their spouse. Okay, let me just say spouse because I don't want to be like a thing. They're arguing with their spouse about them having to sacrifice everything in their life, but they got fucked up at them. Maybe they fucked their best friend, or maybe they fucked a neighbor, or some horrible shit. Would you still go on that plane knowing that this man right here?
Depends how suicidal my feeling. I mean, sometimes it could just be like, well, I mean, it's one way to die.
Oh, man. Oh, dog. You.
Yeah, did you hear that Bob was on that plane with a guy? smash them into the mountain. Hey, that's a story, bro. That's a way to go out.
yo, dog. I'm afraid I won't be able to board the plane, bro. I'm ready to die. No.
Yeah, no. Like, to be honest, yo, like that's a conundrum. That is definitely like a, how much faith do I have in my fellow man? Like, kind of situation.
No ways, bro. No ways that person is. Yo, it's just gonna drive and be.
Or maybe, you know, maybe it's their way to calm down. You know, they get into the zen mode of like.
Well, we better hope so. 99% better be on that if you're gonna put that plane. And just that 1% that might just fuck it.
Oh lordy.
Well, that was a dark part of the episode, ladies and gentlemen. If you made it through, you are in cruising altitude now.
We are reaching cruising altitude, and I'm about to jump out the fucking plane. If you look to your right, you will see me with a parachute. Like,
fuck you guys. I'm out. And then you drop with your middle finger.
See, if we had budget, we could write some funny shit.
Yeah, bro. Like some, yo. The thing is, not everybody's going to get it, but the people that are going to get it will get it.
What is a big mistake that you have learned an important lesson from? Oh, you didn't know that was coming, hey?
I didn't know that was coming. I've had a lot.
Like you haven't prepared this entirely and you're just pretending right now that you're thinking.
No, I've actually haven't looked back and said, oh, that was a big mistake. But I feel like in my situation, which is the part that's going to make me cry now, is because my situation, just me being me, has never made me exist in a place where I have to be. What was the question again?
What's important?
Big mistake. Okay. We're in a situation where I had to make a big mistake that allows me to fuck up everything. Because I've always known, okay, if I go towards this way, I'm going to fuck up this way. So I need to keep it together. I don't know if I got you.
I get what you're saying there. Like, that's the thing. You, like, you haven't been able to risk as much.
Exactly. And also, I've been careful. I've been pretty much careful with my life. Wink, wink. I've done, you know, just enough not to inconvenience the people around me.
Like, yeah, because of family and exactly. Religion and like, yeah.
Exactly. So anything that I do is totally on me and I take full, you know, accountability and stuff like that. So yeah.
So you haven't fucked up yet?
I don't think I have fucked up yet. But I've been fucked up by situations that I am, which is way out of my control. Yeah. So actually, that was supposed to be the first answer. I'm fucked up more by my situation than my own doings.
And what do you mean by that? This is about
the family thing. I'm sure Q is laughing right now. You know, the whole financial part, and also, you know, just not being in the right place at the right time and stuff like that. Well, like being in the right place but the wrong time. Either way, so
yeah, yeah. I totally feel you on that. Like. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like you just keep persevering. That is one thing.
Dog, you gotta keep afloat, man. You just gotta make sure that you keep your head high enough to breathe.
Just do the doggy paddle.
Just got a doggy paddle. So yeah, man. Thanks for having me today. Yeah. Oh, wait. Can I have a closer, please?
Can you have a?
A closer.
What do you mean?
Like a message to the world.
Yes, of course.
All right, cool. And then you will close after that. So I've come to think about it, because like I've been watching about like the pyramids and stuff like that and like ancient civilization. I feel like we are one of the first civilization that hasn't added that much value into the entire history of humanity, right? But we have done more destroying.
Okay.
You get what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying.
We have fucked up the ozone layer more than any other civilization.
Yeah. Last 100 years, yeah.
What? How more can we fuck up, bro? Like, we've deforestation everywhere. We have deforestation everywhere. Like, and almost like the funny part that I also found, like, if our civilization has to get wiped today, like just maybe like a great flood, there's just going to be buildings after this. And the next civilization that's going to come through, are they going to be able to open a hard drive? Because now everything is in the cloud, right? just like how we cannot explain how they cut the stones and the pyramids and stuff like that. They won't be able to access, you know, like our archives or clouds and stuff.
Because I've definitely thought about stuff like that.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
You and I are the same, bro. Fuck, put it here. We should hang out more.
No, I've definitely thought about stuff like future civilizations, uh-huh. like, you know, depending on what happens and how it happens.
Uh-huh.
You know, like how, because, you know, how knowledge over time distorts. And like, you know, yeah, like people in 2,000 years time, you know, whether things are going well or they dystopian or whatever, could look at like a fucking hard drive and have no clue what it is. And true, just be true, like, true. These people, what were they doing? Like, you know, but I mean... Yeah, like obviously there's the written record that contains some of that stuff, but anyway.
Yeah. But then I feel like I don't know how they're going to recycle or shit because fucking condoms, bro. Is there a way of recycling condoms? I don't know. Okay, for them, but they'll figure it out.
I mean, I just use mine 3 times. You know?
Fucking chips, Kate. I don't know why I use
to save the environment.
I don't know why I used an example for a condom when we still haven't figured out how to recycle plastic.
Yeah, well, anyway.
Yeah, oh, the next civilization is fucked in. They'll deal with that shit.
Yeah, dude, the next civilization is going to have microplastics.
Use straws as much as you can. Use those straws. Fuck him. I'm sorry, future grandkids. Anyway, that was my final...
Your thoughts. Final thoughts.
Yeah, just
easy
like...
Jerry Springer.
Yeah, we have fucked up the world, guys. I don't know. Let's just be nice to each other.
At least you got the message in there. Like when you were just like, we fucked up the world, guys. I was like, and that's the end of the podcast, everyone.
I saved myself. Anyway, cool.
Cool. Thank you very much, bro.
Thanks for having me, Bob. Lovely.
So that was Vinny. Yeah, man. Like, we, as you can tell, we had a really good time there. A lot of laughs, a lot of dark fucking jokes. But that's what's been, I think, quite fun about the whole NQR crew vibe that we've got going on. It's like, yo, we're always cracking jokes and they're always pretty fucked up and it's always like quite dark. And it's fun to just have that camaraderie with other comedians because it's not necessarily something I've ever really had, you know? Like, I've got people who I connect with in comedy, but like usually just on an individual level. And yeah, like it's quite different, you know, like Neil Green's obviously one of my oldest friends in comedy, but you know, we're not exactly, you know, doing suicide jokes all that often. We're actually usually just talking about like games and movies and music and shit. And it's been cool to have a comedy crew, you know, like it's as much as it's a individual game, it's also not, like I kind of brought that up last week with Ambrose and stuff, you know, that yeah, like it's a solo sport, but at the same time you do have your colleagues, you do have the people that you work with, and it's cool to be able to connect with them, because like I say, like I've like you would have heard like in the podcast, like obviously there's been a bit of a disconnect between me and, you know, certain people within the Durban comedy scene and that, but I think that's just me in general, you know, I've always been on the outside of whatever scene I'm in. Even if I'm in the fucking middle of the thing, I still feel like I'm on the outside, I guess. And yeah, it's just been cool. Like I've said multiple times now, to have a crew of people who I can really just connect with and really just work together with and not be too stressed about what anyone else is fucking doing, you know? Not really worry about like how I fit in other circles and this and that, because I don't need to. Speaking of which, CM Punk. What a laugh. What a career. What a fucking lightning rod for controversy. And what a fucking draw, man. Like, I think this whole him going back to WWE thing was quite surprising in some ways and quite inevitable in others. You know, it's quite surprising because him and one Paul Levesque, aka Triple H, have not had kind words for each other for many, 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 many fucking years now. And Paul Levesque is in charge of WWE, well, to a degree. Like, he's like second in command, I think. It's him and Nick Khan who are running things over there now that Vinnie Mac is gone. And yeah, like, you wouldn't think that they would be able to patch things up, but I guess money fucking talks. And I think Punk also probably doesn't want to end his career, you know, being disgraced, being fired from AEW for fighting and causing shit and all of that. And, you know, personally, I still think, yeah, AEW did the right thing. They probably needed to fire him. He was a fucking locker room cancer. And if they're ever going to grow as a company, they need to actually focus on the talent that they have there that wants to work with them. And that, you know, really doesn't put themselves above the product. You know, it doesn't put themselves above the company and stuff. Because wherever Punk goes, man, he's always going to have that chip on his shoulder. And does tend to get in his own way. So that's been a common theme throughout his career, even early on. And it'll be interesting to see. That's the problem now. Like, WWE is going to be dealing with all the drama that AEW is dealing with, where the stories on screen get, you know, sidelined, basically, because of all the backstage drama that's going on. So we'll see what actually happens. I think there could be some exciting stories. I'm actually, yeah, probably going to watch more WWE now, which I haven't done, even with Cody there, even with, you know, like, I've watched some of the Bloodline stuff, especially with Sami Zayn and all of that, but in general, like, I haven't really been paying that much attention. I just hear what's happening there. I'm like, ah, it sounds pretty cool. I'm not a fan of the in-ring product, really. Like, I find AEW and New Japan and, you know, quite a few of the other companies are just more exciting when it comes to the actual wrestling. And so, yeah, like, I'm interested to see the storylines and how they play out. And WWE is definitely on the upswing at the moment. I still just see them as, like, you know, fucking one of the most evil companies in the world. So it always makes it a little tricky to want to carry on watching them and to support them. But they ain't getting any of my money. And I use ad blockers on YouTube. So they ain't getting any of that advertising money from me either. So yeah, I think I'll be keeping up with CM Punk is what I'm saying. Even though he did, yo, there's so many things he's fucking said and they're all coming out again. But I love the one where he told The Miz to go suck a blood-covered dick. Go suck a blood-covered Saudi Arabian oil dick, I think was what he said. Something like that. And, well, it looks like CM Punk's going to be getting some of that oily dick in his mouth too. Especially if he goes over there next year. That'll be interesting to see. But yeah, that's it. I guess that's all I got to talk to you about this week. I did say I wanted to talk about the end of the year, but we've got 3-4 more weeks or whatever to talk about it. I'm sure I'll find some time to reflect over the next couple of weeks. I already have been. Like, my diary entry this morning was very reflective. So yeah, we'll have something to talk about next week and the week after that and the week after that. It's funny how it works. Always turns out that there's something to be said. And with that being said, it is time to give the shout out. Now, over at patreon.com/almostperfect, there is a tier. There's a top tier. There's a $10 tier. It's called the Titular Titles tier. And you can pick your title right here on the Almost Perfect podcast for $10 a month. So, shout outs to Rousseau, the storage clerk of subtle heresies in the Lesser Oberg region. Russell Grant, the Far East correspondent. Neil Green, the key grip. Grant Slamon, the Almost Perfect hedge fund manager. Riz Ventura, the director of purchasing. Karan Chetty, the assistant to the regional manager. Kath Jenkin, the inevitable ruler of the universe. And Queen Swifty, the executive producer, Stephen Olafier. Shout out to Damien Root for the bed music, the intro, and a big thank you to you for listening all the way through to the end. I'll catch you on the flip side.